ES3-C25, VTCT-ITEC, Level 3 Certificate in ESOL International, C2, Paper G. Part 1. You have 2 minutes to read the questions to prepare for the next part. You will hear 8 sentences or questions. Listen to each sentence or question, then choose the correct response to each sentence or question from the options A, B, C, or D. You will hear the recording twice. Question 1. We should help them. They're living on the breadline. Question 2. I'm going to gatecrash Sally's party this weekend. Question 3. It's the monotony of the work that's forcing me to leave. Question 4. The film I saw last night was a real tearjerker. Question 5. I need to swat up on a few things before Friday. Question 6. I've got an appointment for a pedicure at 4 o'clock. Question 7. There are going to be lots of different acts at the show, including a conjurer. Question 8. I think I need to get some bifocals. Question 1. We should help them. They're living on the breadline. Question 2. I'm going to gatecrash Sally's party this weekend. Question 3. It's the monotony of the work that's forcing me to leave. Question 4. The film I saw last night was a real tearjerker. Question 5. I need to swat up on a few things before Friday. Question 6. I've got an appointment for a pedicure at 4 o'clock. Question 7. There are going to be lots of different acts at the show, including a conjurer. Question 8. I think I need to get some bifocals. Part 2, Part A. You have 2 minutes to read the questions to prepare for the next part. You will hear a conversation. Listen to a conversation, then select the correct answer for questions 9 to 14 by choosing from A, B, C, or D. You will hear the recording twice.
I went to the nature reserve this morning.
Really? You didn't say you were going when you went out.
Well, it was a bit of a spur of the moment thing. I was going to walk the dog on the beach. Then I remembered reading online that the reserve had reopened and I thought I'd check it out.
I didn't know it had reopened. Is it still free?
Yes, although they suggest you donate, but it's not compulsory. I have to say, it's looking quite different actually. You can tell some work has been done. The paths look a bit tidier. I mean, more accessible. And they've put railings up around some of the hill trails.
Oh, I'm glad about that. It felt a bit precarious walking up there before.
I know what you mean. I noticed some of the footpaths have been blocked off. Not sure why. But to be honest, the ones with all the views are still there. They could do with a few more benches dotted about the place, I thought. Not everyone is super fit or young. But apart from that, it's all good.
Have they done anything about the parking? It was a bit chaotic up there before.
Yes, it's much better. They've marked bays in, so it'll be easier to park, although they haven't extended the area at all. I think they should have done that.
Me too. But I suppose it'll just have to be first come, first served, like before. It won't be a problem for us, though. We're early birds.
And they've built some sort of information centre. It's a bit like a mini museum, with some displays and information about the birds and wildlife you can see on the reserve, and what conservation projects are going on. There's a little shop too.
That sounds good. What about the cafe? Is that still there?
Yes, but it was shut.
The cakes in there were to die for, and their hot chocolate was really scrumptious.
Which is more than can be said of their sandwiches. Some of the other snacks were passable, though, if a bit on the pricey side. But it looked to me like it's still undergoing some sort of refurbishment. You'd think that they'd have a notice up saying when it will reopen.
You'd imagine so. I don't expect we'll be going for a few weeks with us going away soon. By the time we get back, it might be open.
Absolutely. Right. What are we having for dinner? I went to the nature reserve this morning.
Really? You didn't say you were going when you went out.
Well, it was a bit of a spur of the moment thing. I was going to walk the dog on the beach. Then I remembered reading online that the reserve had reopened and I thought I'd check it out.
I didn't know it had reopened. Is it still free?
Yes, although they suggest you donate, but it's not compulsory. I have to say, it's looking quite different actually. You can tell some work has been done. The paths look a bit tidier. I mean, more accessible. And they've put railings up around some of the hill trails.
Oh, I'm glad about that. It felt a bit precarious walking up there before.
I know what you mean. I noticed some of the footpaths have been blocked off. Not sure why. But to be honest, the ones with all the views are still there. They could do with a few more benches dotted about the place, I thought. Not everyone is super fit or young. But apart from that, it's all good.
Have they done anything about the parking? It was a bit chaotic up there before.
Yes, it's much better. They've marked bays in, so it'll be easier to park, although they haven't extended the area at all. I think they should have done that.
Me too. But I suppose it'll just have to be first come, first served, like before. It won't be a problem for us, though. We're early birds.
And they've built some sort of information centre. It's a bit like a mini museum, with some displays and information about the birds and wildlife you can see on the reserve, and what conservation projects are going on. There's a little shop too.
That sounds good. What about the cafe? Is that still there?
Yes, but it was shut.
The cakes in there were to die for, and their hot chocolate was really scrumptious.
Which is more than can be said of their sandwiches. Some of the other snacks were passable, though, if a bit on the pricey side. But it looked to me like it's still undergoing some sort of refurbishment. You'd think that they'd have a notice up saying when it will reopen.
You'd imagine so. I don't expect we'll be going for a few weeks with us going away soon. By the time we get back, it might be open.
Absolutely. Right. What are we having for dinner?
Part 2. Part B. You have 2 minutes to read the questions to prepare for the next part. Listen to a conversation, then select the correct answer for questions 15 to 20 by choosing from A, B, C or D. You will hear the conversation twice. Hi, George. How's it going? I haven't seen you around for the last few weeks. Have you been off sick? Or away on holiday? Or even better, did you end up on another one of those fancy business trips to South America?
Ha! That was only the once. The company sent me away on a course, actually. So interesting. I've got another 3 months to complete the virtual modules, then I'll be done.
That sounds quite involved. Not the usual day or two. What was it about?
Ergonomics.
What's that? Never heard of it.
So, ergonomics. It's about adjusting the workplace environment to avoid injuries and muscular problems, you know, like backache, repetitive strain injury, stuff like that.
But you're not from a medical background, are you? Why do you need to know about all that kind of thing? You work in human resources.
I know, but these kinds of injuries are among the most frequently reported causes of lost work time. So basically, what we're trying to do, I mean, our department, is increase staff productivity, efficiency, and minimise discomfort by modifying the work environment accordingly.
I don't get it.
Look, if you think about the angle of your computer monitor or the height of your desk, is it comfortable? Does it really suit you? Or are you going home with a stiff neck every night? Think about whether your eyes are strained by the end of the day from looking at a screen or if your wrists hurt from typing. Conventional office furniture has traditionally encouraged stiff, fixed postures, which allows for little movement. It's completely unnatural to be hunched up like that all day.
Well, now you mention it, my shoulders do always feel stiff.
Right, so ergonomics can prevent most workplace aches and pains by adjusting tools like your desk, chair, computer, etc. to the user, which will help to reduce the impact of repetitive movements.
So, how are you going to implement that? Are we all having training on it?
Eventually. We're going to assess things like lighting, office layout, equipment and positioning of furniture first. Ergonomics also takes into account the need for movement throughout the day. What we really need to focus on is a balance between sitting, standing and moving around. So, a major improvement would be height-adaptable desks. Hopefully, we'll be getting some.
Wow. So you've had to study all of this?
I had some other duties taken off of me, so I can coordinate the work on this.
I suppose it's another string to your bow, if somewhat niche. I'd question whether you could make a full-blown career out of it, though.
Ah, yes, but it's a growing area in the larger companies. You know, so it will really go in my favour in terms of job prospects and career development.
No doubt. Well, I'd better go before my boss starts looking for me. See you later.
OK, nice chatting. See you soon.
Hi, George. How's it going? I haven't seen you around for the last few weeks. Have you been off sick? Or away on holiday? Or even better, did you end up on another one of those fancy business trips to South America?
Ha! That was only the once. The company sent me away on a course, actually. So interesting. I've got another 3 months to complete the virtual modules, then I'll be done.
That sounds quite involved. Not the usual day or two. What was it about?
Ergonomics.
What's that? Never heard of it.
So, ergonomics. It's about adjusting the workplace environment to avoid injuries and muscular problems, you know, like backache, repetitive strain injury, stuff like that.
But you're not from a medical background, are you? Why do you need to know about all that kind of thing? You work in human resources.
I know, but these kinds of injuries are among the most frequently reported causes of lost work time. So basically, what we're trying to do, I mean, our department, is increase staff productivity, efficiency, and minimise discomfort by modifying the work environment accordingly.
I don't get it.
Look, if you think about the angle of your computer monitor or the height of your desk, is it comfortable? Does it really suit you? Or are you going home with a stiff neck every night? Think about whether your eyes are strained by the end of the day from looking at a screen or if your wrists hurt from typing. Conventional office furniture has traditionally encouraged stiff, fixed postures, which allows for little movement. It's completely unnatural to be hunched up like that all day.
Well, now you mention it, my shoulders do always feel stiff.
Right, so ergonomics can prevent most workplace aches and pains by adjusting tools like your desk, chair, computer, etc. to the user, which will help to reduce the impact of repetitive movements.
So, how are you going to implement that? Are we all having training on it?
Eventually. We're going to assess things like lighting, office layout, equipment and positioning of furniture first. Ergonomics also takes into account the need for movement throughout the day. What we really need to focus on is a balance between sitting, standing and moving around. So, a major improvement would be height-adaptable desks. Hopefully, we'll be getting some.
Wow, so you've had to study all of this.
I had some other duties taken off of me, so I can coordinate the work on this.
I suppose it's another string to your bow, if somewhat niche. I'd question whether you could make a full-blown career out of it, though.
Ah, yes, but it's a growing area in the larger companies. You know, so it will really go in my favour in terms of job prospects and career development.
No doubt. Well, I'd better go before my boss starts looking for me. See you later.
OK, nice chatting. See you soon.
Part 3. You have 2 minutes to read the questions to prepare for the next part. Listen to a broadcast, then select the correct answer to questions 21 to 30 by choosing from A, B, C, or D. You will hear the broadcast twice.
We've all heard of fake news, but what about deep fakes? Deep fakes are created by using a form of artificial intelligence to make fake images. Deepfake technology can produce convincing but fictional photos and even video, habitually using online images of well-known people. Audio can be deepfaked too, to create a voice clone of public figures or even singers. However, it's not easy to make a good deepfake on an average computer. Most are created on high-end desktops with state-of-the-art graphics. This reduces the processing time from days and weeks to hours. But it takes expertise too, to touch up any visual defects. That said, plenty of tools are now available to help people make deepfakes. Several companies can make them for you. In fact, There's even a mobile phone app that lets users add their own face to a list of screen actors to develop their own images. It is getting harder to spot a deepfake as technology improves. For example, in 2018, researchers realised that deepfake eyes don't blink correctly. No sooner had the research been published than deepfakes appeared with normal blinking. As soon as a weakness is revealed, it is fixed. Poor quality deepfakes are easier to identify. The lip syncing might be bad, or the skin tone poor. There can be flickering around the edges of transposed faces. Fine details, such as hair, are particularly challenging for deepfakes to replicate effectively. Badly rendered jewellery and teeth can also be a giveaway, as can inconsistent illumination and poor lighting. But could deepfakes trigger major international incidents? Unlikely. A deepfake of a world leader issuing threats or a deepfake satellite images of troops amassing on a border will not create such mayhem, as most nations have their own reliable security imaging systems. However, the more worrying impact of deepfakes, along with fake news, is to create a zero-trust culture where people cannot distinguish truth from fiction. And when trust is eroded, it is far easier to raise doubts about people and events. Ironically, artificial intelligence may be the answer. AI already helps to spot fake videos, and experts in the field are now working on detection systems that aim to flag up fakes whenever they appear. Indeed, governments, universities, and tech firms are all funding research to detect deepfakes, which means research teams around the globe are now competing for supremacy in the deepfake detection game. We've all heard of fake news, but what about deepfakes? Deepfakes are created by using a form of artificial intelligence to make fake images. Deepfake technology can produce convincing but fictional photos and even video, habitually using online images of well-known people. Audio can be deepfaked too, to create a voice clone of public figures or even singers. However, it's not easy to make a good deepfake on an average computer. Most are created on high-end desktops with state-of-the-art graphics. This reduces the processing time from days and weeks to hours. But it takes expertise too, to touch up any visual defects. That said, plenty of tools are now available to help people make deepfakes. Several companies can make them for you. In fact, there's even a mobile phone app that lets users add their own face to a list of screen actors to develop their own images. It is getting harder to spot a deepfake as technology improves. For example, in 2018, researchers realised that deepfake eyes don't blink correctly. No sooner had the research been published than deepfakes appeared with normal blinking. As soon as a weakness is revealed, it is fixed. Poor quality deepfakes are easier to identify. The lip syncing might be bad, or the skin tone poor. There can be flickering around the edges of transposed faces. Fine details, such as hair, are particularly challenging for deepfakes to replicate effectively. Badly rendered jewellery and teeth can also be a giveaway, as can inconsistent illumination and poor lighting. But could deepfakes trigger major international incidents? Unlikely. A deepfake of a world leader issuing threats or a deepfake satellite images of troops amassing on a border will not create such mayhem, as most nations have their own reliable security imaging systems. However, the more worrying impact of deepfakes, along with fake news, is to create a zero-trust culture where people cannot distinguish truth from fiction. And when trust is eroded, it is far easier to raise doubts about people and events. Ironically, artificial intelligence may be the answer. AI already helps to spot fake videos, and experts in the field are now working on detection systems that aim to flag up fakes whenever they appear. Indeed, governments, universities, and tech firms are all funding research to detect deepfakes, which means research teams around the globe are now competing for supremacy in the deepfake detection game.
Closing actions. This is the end of this assessment. You will now have 5 minutes to transfer your answers to the answer booklet and check that you have answered all of the questions. That is the end of this assessment.